How much should contractors charge the government for labor for a project? Perhaps not surprisingly, it all depends. That's why we have lawyers. It gets murkier when subcontractors are involved. In a long-running case between Kinetic and the General Services Administration, GSA is asking for millions. It says the company overcharged. The company sued, saying it was doing what the government asked for. In this week's Legal Loop, procurement attorney Joe Petrillo sorts out things in this highly watched case. Joe, good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
All right, so give us the background here. This goes back a long time, this contract. I guess Kinetic bought the original contractor involved.
Well, this involves charges by ITS, which is a Kinetic subcontractor, under its GSA schedule contract, Group 70 for IT services and such, for a 10-year period from 1998 to 2008. And there was an audit of a slice of that period, and it was extrapolated out that ITS owed GSA $21 million in overcharges, of which $18 million related to this issue of what rate do you charge subcontract labor.
So what rate do you charge subcontract labor?
Well, Emily, that's an interesting question. ITS used the rates in its GSA schedule contract. And GSA took the position that it should have been charged at cost as if it were a material item added to the contract. Now, under the clauses in the contract at that time, it really wasn't clear as to which way you should charge. But in February of 2007, the clause was changed for GSA contracts and really for all contracts. The FAR clause was changed as well. And it made clear that you charge subcontractor labor at the prime contract rates.
So even if the subcontractor rates are lower, the prime still gets the higher rate.
Right. That's or higher, whichever way it the prime only gets the rate in the prime contract for that labor.
So sub labor could actually be higher than the prime contractor.
It could be, yes. And the prime would have to eat the difference. The issue here is what about the prior clause where it wasn't spelled out, and that's what's got this case going.
So explain that. Does this case have implications beyond just Kinetic and GSA in that point of time?
Well, it may very well, because charging subcontract labor at prime contract rates was, I think, a very common practice. And it was a common practice for reasons that that ITS spell out in their lawsuit, basically that was the guidance you would get from GSA. They cited information on the GSA website that said that going back to 2004. So that was commonly believed to be the way to do things.
GSA explicitly said that?
On their website, they had a memo which ITS quotes saying that that's the way it's supposed to happen. In addition, you can argue that from the language of the clause. There's some good arguments from the language of the clause as well. But it appears that the GSA had put out that guidance some time ago. And in addition, ITS said, well, look, we disclosed this in many of our proposals, and in fact, some of the task orders direct us to charge subcontractor labor at prime contract rates. But in spite of that, and in spite of the fact that the clause was changed to explicitly adopt that provision, GSA is going forward with this case.
So, by the way, we're speaking with Joe Petrillo, a procurement attorney with Petrillo and Powell. So the terms got changed in between all of this, in other words. So it's a question of whether you go by the new terms or the terms that were in place when the contract was let.
Well, this case only involves the clause that didn't have that clarifying language, which is the old clause that was in contracts before 2007, when things were started to get changed. And there certainly were lots of contracts and lots of labor charged in that period of time. Now, there's a six-year statute of limitations, and so some of those charges are going to be expiring, but there's a question about at what point the statute begins to run. Is it when you submit the invoice, or is it when the government becomes aware of the practice, or when they audit it later on? There are a lot of complicating factors there that we don't have time to get into. But this is a case where ITS, I think, is being has gotten caught with something that was pretty common in industry, and that is use the rate in your contract. They've got, I think, a pretty strong case here, but it's continuing to go on, and we'll see what the court has to say when it comes to a decision.
And, you know, has the company been penalized at all? I mean, economically, has it felt the pinch from this?
There's nothing in the complaint about that. So it appears that this is being handled as a classic contract dispute and hasn't necessarily caused the company to lose business. It isn't clear that any of the customers it had are at all upset about this. You have to remember that this case, I mean, the reason GSA is going after a contractor for doing exactly what practice that it has since approved is that it's an IG audit. And, the IG has their own view of things. And sometimes it's the view that gets the government the most money. And in this case, that's what's pushing the case forward, I believe.
So to be clear, GSA said on its website, it's okay to do this. The agency didn't really seem to have any problem with it. In fact, it's now common practice and accepted. But it was the inspector general who said, wait a second, they're charging you too much?
That's exactly right. This is the result of an IG audit. They looked at a slice of contracts for a period of time, decided that there were overcharges, and then extrapolated that out for a 10-year period, and you get a bill for $21 million.
But was the guidance that was in anticipation of the change in the clause, that is, GSA said, go ahead and do this, even before it was enshrined in the regulations, was that in writing or was it in verbally? I mean, what evidence does the company have to say they told us to do this?
Well, that's an area where GSA, I think, is really at fault. I mean, there was a memo that was an internal memo for the regional directors on GSA's website that told them to do that. But if you think about it, subcontracting is not an uncommon practice. And so if you're writing a contract and you're putting in labor rates, you would think that the contract would explain how to charge labor rates for subcontractors, and if it didn't, you would think that you used the rate in the contract. GSA, I think, was remiss in not providing explicit guidance early on and waiting until 2007 to have a contract clause that addressed it.
And there's also a twist in the latest court complaint that regarding whether the contractor needed to file its defenses as an affirmative claim. I guess that's a procedural thing in the court, but I guess that's making some legal ripples in town also.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this case was filed in 2012, December of 2012, recently another complaint has been filed in this year and joined, of course, to that first complaint. And part of the case that ITS has is two affirmative defenses. One, as they've said, equitable estoppel. You told us to do this. We did it. It's not fair for you to change your mind now. And the other defense is good faith and fair dealing. You know, having followed your guidance, we acted in good faith, and you're not dealing with us fairly in coming after us for these charges. You would think that when the government sends you a bill and you have those defenses, that when you object to the bill, you've teed up those issues. But there's this very strange case in the Court of Appeals of the Federal Circuit called Moropicus. And in that case, a construction contractor said that it shouldn't have been terminated for default because the government delayed the project. And in that case, the Court of Appeals said, well, you've got to take this argument of delay, this issue of delay, and file it as an affirmative claim against the government in order to use it as a defense for the termination, which most procurement lawyers find absolutely bizarre. But we've got this case. It's from the appellate court. And so in an abundance of caution, ITS's lawyers filed these defenses as affirmative claims, and now have added them to the case.
Joe Petrillo is a procurement attorney with the law firm Petrillo & Powell. Joe, thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Emily, and thank you, Tom.